Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 22nd. I'm Aaron Schella-Levine. It's Pets and Vets Day, and we are joined by Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. We might get an extra vet or two sneaking in here towards the finish line, or at least start line of the show, but we'll stay tuned for that. If you have a question about your dog or cat, give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. Or email the show at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. O'Loughlin will be here, and your pet questions will get answered coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Aaron Schella-Levine, still in for Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program today on this Wednesday, July 22nd. Yeah, we'll get there. It's been a long week already. And here to take your calls are Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs and retired vet Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. Thank you guys so much for taking your time and joining us here today. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. And you can, of course, email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Thanks, guys, so much for making the trip out.
Yeah, it's great to be back. It's been a couple months for me, so.
Amazing. Well, yeah. We're always happy to have you back. It's a great show. I always tune in when I'm usually tune in anyways, but I've got my own.
Do you have pets?
He's turning 9 in a couple of weeks as a 9-year-old golden doodle, Minnie.
Nice.
I was walking him yesterday and I on the city streets essentially of Saratoga Springs, and I was still picking ticks off of him.
So we'll open this up.
Vet tips on dealing with ticks, either after they're in, while they're still crawling around. What?
Midsummer?
How do I?
Oh, that's
I know.
Very disheartening to hear.
Yes. Frightening.
Yeah.
What do you guys recommend?
Were you downtown, actually? Or did you go through Congress Park? Or?
So, no. I mean, I wasn't even downtown. It was like maybe 5 minutes out, sort of east-ish side, just wandering about. You know, must have picked him up. He loves to roll, so that might be it.
Yeah.
All you need to do is get to some tall grass. And
yep, that's it.
They're there.
Oh, God, that's so disheartening.
Yeah.
Stay out of the
tall
grass.
Easy enough, right.
I know, it's really
I mean,
hard.
If you see them still crawling on the dog, a good old brushing.
Sure.
They'll do it. You know, if they're on the dog, they do make these cool little twisty tools that'll twist them right out. Worst case scenario, the good old tweezers. And, you know, if the head doesn't come out, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
The dog will spit it out. Their body will get rid of it.
Okay.
So don't try digging, you know, for gold to try and get the head out. Just leave it.
Do you guys recommend the tick collars or the tick medicine or both, all of the above?
I like the
Either
collar.
Or.
I like the collar because, I mean, there are only two products that repel ticks, and the collar is one of them.
Sure.
Is it 100% effective? No, but I have clients who like have, you know, actual sheep herding dogs, and you know,
and
they're
working.
Out there.
Yeah. Right.
And the difference they saw when they started using that was really tremendous. They went from like 30 ticks per outing to one.
Is there a reason that the because I know the ticks like to go to the back of the neck. Well, do we know why? It's just a tick thing?
Well, I think, I mean, just also dogs are moving forward, and so, you know, it's just where they happen to catch
it.
And they go for
right.
warm parts of the body, so behind the ears and things like that, but... Yeah, it's really disheartening because usually they're less active this time of year. So I'm actually not happy to hear that you were picking them up.
It was not. I mean, I did a bunch of reporting at the beginning of the season. Was, oh, you know, supposed to see more ticks and blah blah blah. But and you know, all of the researchers I talked to was, well, yeah, once it gets hot,
yeah, typically
they calm down.
Yeah.
So,
but now there's this new. Was it the Texas
new everything?
Short-eared tick or whatever.
I think it's the Lone Star tick.
No, there's a Lone Star tick, but there's another one.
Oh, great. Oh, I did read about that.
Yes. And they don't even need a mate to reproduce.
Oh, yes.
So they can produce thousands of eggs and make
lots
of babies.
That's exactly what we need, more ticks.
I know.
Yeah.
Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. We've got some calls already piling up. Brielle in Saratoga Springs, who I believe, unless there's another Brielle, is my neighbor just down the street.
Huh?
Brielle, you are on.
Hello.
Hi, Brielle.
Yes, we're neighbors, yes. And Dr. Chris, I've been to you many times, and I adore and I love you, and I'll be back soon.
Hi, Brielle. I was like, I think I know who this is, too.
Yes. So my question is, we just adopted an older Yorkie. He's 5 pounds and very well endowed, let's say, on the radio, and, as Aaron knows. And he has had chronic UTIs since we got him 2 months ago. Any tips?
Well, have you had any x-rays done yet, Brielle, to see if he's carrying any bladder stones, perhaps, or?
That's a great idea. We've done a ultrasound. I don't know if we've done an x-ray down there.
Okay, but you had an ultrasound done.
To look for the bladder. Yeah, I think the bladder was clear. I think it was clear, yeah.
And they didn't see any oddly shaped bladder or anything that could have...
No. No, he's been on 3 antibiotics in the last, like, 6 weeks. And the last one did work. He's finally clear as of this morning.
I wonder if it could be his prostate.
That's what I was just going to say. Yeah, did his prostate look okay on the ultrasound?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, because if you get infection in the prostate, it's got a lot of nooks and crannies.
Yeah.
So it may just take a long treatment to clear it out.
Yeah.
I would make sure he keeps getting cultured and make sure it's totally, totally gone before you stop any treatment.
Right. And then there's some really nice supplements that can help kind of soothe the bladder, kind of line it with some nice... have you heard of using Adequan too for the bladder? Yeah.
Yep.
So there's some other nice supplements out there, Brielle, that we could talk about sometime that help, you know, not let the bacteria stick to the bladder. But you definitely want to rule out more structural things first with your regular vet.
Yeah.
And definitely the prostate can be a culprit for sure. If they've already looked at the bladder, I'd want to look at that prostate as well. So... Yeah, good
That's
luck.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
But thank you for adopting an older dog. Yeah.
Brielle, thanks so much. Yeah, I mean, again, they are my neighbors. They are notorious for, they always pick up the oldest dog they can find at the shelter.
I took care of old Benji.
Oh my goodness, what a sweetheart he was.
I know. Mm. He was a wonderful dog. So,
when it comes to adopting older dogs, I mean, of course, it is an incredible thing to get to do for folks who are maybe on the fence and they've thought about it. From the vet's perspective, apart from the endorsement that you've already given, you know, what are the big things to really be keeping an eye on when that's the kind of thing you're thinking of?
I mean, it definitely can become expensive.
Sure, right, yeah.
Could be you could be inheriting some major, you know, health issues, chronic health issues.
Right,
that's the thing.
Right.
So
yeah, sometimes, I mean, you adopt an older dog and it's great. You don't have to go through the puppy stage and all that, but they can also come with baggage.
Yes.
So
and behavioral stuff too, perhaps too.
Yeah. So you don't know, you know, why did they end up in the shelter? You know?
But that's kind of what I plan to do, I think, for my future.
Cause... I mean, I adopted an older dog a year or so ago. We actually have no idea how old she was, but we assumed she was middle-aged.
Right.
And she was found on the street, so who knows.
Oh.
And, you know, she only lasted 8 months, but she had a good 8 months.
Yeah.
Sure,
you know?
I'm sure
so
she did.
I figured better than dying on the street.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
She had a happy home.
That's awesome.
You can do what you can while you got them.
Yeah.
You
know? And aren't there some rescues that kind of specialize in, like, pulling geriatric dogs out of shelters and adopting them out?
Yep.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I love that.
Great.
I know Homeward Bound was one of them.
Yes, that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
Older adult dogs.
Yeah.
Taking a look through our emails, we've got a letter from Cheryl, who says, my 12-year-old feline, Tom, is finally over the worst of acute IBD and pancreatitis. He will not eat the prescribed prescription diet, but has finally settled for rabbit pate and old standby. Or it's an old standby, the rabbit pate is. Fancy Feast classic beef with occasional dry sensitive digestion. He is also on small daily dose of budesonide, 25 milliliters once a day. Cheryl's questions are, does he need to be on budesonide forever to keep the IBD quiet? She was told perhaps. 2, are food choices with low fat and same protein source always needed? And 3, Tom wanted me to ask this. What about treats? He loves them, but most are high in fat. Thank you so very much.
I don't think of fat as being as big of a problem in cats as it is in dogs when it comes to pancreatitis. So it's really more about the protein source. And whether the budesonide is a form of a steroid. So mm-hmm. it's to decrease inflammation. So once the inflammation is gone, some cats can just get by on diet. Mm-hmm. The only way to know is to taper them off.
Yep.
And if the signs come back, then you find the lowest possible dose that will keep them happy.
Yep.
And you keep them on it. But it sounds like they're doing the right stuff.
And I would add, I have a cat who's heading down this road myself, unfortunately. And so far, I have been managing him with B12 injections alone. And it is keeping him off of prescription diets and off of medications for now. And yep. I've been amazed at actually how effective it's been. So it may be something to add. B12 is it's a nutrient for the actual cells that line the gut. So it may be something worth adding. There's a protocol that is written up for inflammatory bowel disease. So they could talk to their veterinarian about that. It does have to be given. Well, I'm giving it in injectable form. I think that's generally the way to go.
Yeah, I've heard of people doing B12 orally.
I know.
But I was always taught that, if their guts aren't working great, it's not going to absorb.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And it doesn't hurt. The injection doesn't hurt. We will teach clients how to give the injections.
Exactly.
It's like giving insulin at home.
Yep.
And the nice thing with B12, because it's a water-soluble vitamin, it doesn't hurt.
Yep. And you can't give too much.
And it's cheap.
Exactly.
So no bad parts of it.
Yeah.
We're going to take one more email and then go to a short break. This is from Jill, who's got a 12-year-old standard golden doodle, 80-ish pounds, and deaf, takes a daily Dasiquin for large dogs. Over the past couple of days, the rear legs have been acting strange. She is stepping funny with her hind leg, almost like she is tripping over herself. And this morning, she was reluctant to sit again, almost as if it was uncomfortable. She's worried that she's got sort of hip problems, as some of her former golden doodles have had. Any ideas about what might be going on or thoughts about what to do?
Lots of thoughts there. You want to go ahead?
No, I'll let you
go. All right. Well, if it came on suddenly, I'd have some concern about there actually being a neurologic component to that situation. So I do think it's worth a visit to the veterinarian mm-hmm. for that one. And there can be a lot of potential causes for that. One of them could be a disc that suddenly started to protrude on the spinal cord and cause some inflammation. Dogs can also throw a clot to their spinal cord, which is less painful, thankfully. But and if she's still walking, the good news is that would probably be the extent of the damage is what they've seen now. But definitely worth a visit to their veterinarian. And if it was more gradual onset, one of the things I do all day long is acupuncture for dogs who have progressive hind end weakness. And I will say the weather does affect their ability to walk. And so when there are big fronts that come through, especially with high humidity, there are days where they cannot walk as well. Their weakness is much more pronounced.
The old bones.
Yep. And then when the humidity goes, away, their weakness is not as pronounced. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that is because the pain in their arthritis is worse, or if it seems like truly the neurologic component is worse as well. And I haven't totally been able to explain it, but it's definitely been an observation that has been very clear over the last 15 years, because I'll get all the calls on the same day that these dogs are not walking, and then 3 days later they're fine. It's the pattern is clear. I just haven't totally been able to explain that one. So
interesting.
Yeah,
I was thinking neurologic.
I think so too. I think it's worth a visit just based
certainly,
on that
just
short. If I had them,
peace of mind.
If we were talking right now,
right.
I could ask a few questions to get. But just based on the email, I think it's worth a visit. Yeah.
Okay, great. Again, you were listening to Vox Pop here on WAMC. Give us your calls with your pets and vets questions. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop.wamc.org. We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WMC comes from Chester Theatre Company, Chester, Massachusetts, presenting Amchitka, a new philosophical thriller play by Mark St. Germain, July 24 through August 8th, chestertheatre.org for tickets. Ballet Flowers and Design, Malta, New York, a family-owned garden center and flower farm, offering landscape, wedding design services, perennials, annuals, herbs, and interactive classes, balletflowers.com. Foresight Land Services. For over 50 years, offering civil engineering, land surveying, planning, and environmental permitting to private and municipal clients in the Berkshires and Eastern New York. ForesightLand.com. And the Mount Edith Wharton Cultural Center in Lenox, presenting In Conversation with Andre Bernard, featuring Max Boot, historian, foreign policy analyst, and author, July 30th, edithwharton.org for tickets.
You're listening to Vox Pop here on WAMC. It's a Wednesday Pets and Vets Day. We've got Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs and retired vet Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin to help us along. Thank you, folks, for being here. We've got calls piling up. We're just going to go right into it. We've got Martha in Gansevoort. Nope, just kidding. Joan in Schenectady, you're on. I skipped a number. Joan, can you hear us?
I certainly can. You're making me giggle. Thanks, Aaron. I was going to start by thanking you for helping to fill Ray's microphone instead of Ray's shoes. And
well,
I'm
duty
still
going
to go with it. Thank you, Aaron. You're doing a great job. And also, a quick side note before my question, another shout-out thanks to Dr. Carey. You recently added some input on a recent Gardner show.
Yes.
It helped me immensely.
Oh, so they had a question about the lilies. Anyway.
Yeah.
What can we do for you today, Joan?
Today, my friends, how can I help my cat? She's got an itchy patch on the base of her tail, the top. And, yep, following up. I don't see fleas. We're following up on fleas and stuff like that. I heard y'all recently talking about mites, possibly. So I'm looking, as we're pursuing it, but are there any topical things I can help her with in the meanwhile?
First question, when you say you're following up on the fleas, what exactly are you doing for fleas?
It is the over-the-counter, back-of-the-neck droppy things that you put on.
Okay. Some of the over-the-counter drops are not as good because the number one thing that's going to make a cat scratch like that are fleas. And it will only take one flea bite, so you often never see the fleas or any sign of them. So I would make sure you get a good quality flea and tick, possibly one of the collars. And I'm talking about one you get from your vet, not one you get from the store. They work really, really well. I have one on my cat. Or one of the topicals from the vet, just to make sure you're really getting good flea control. If you do that and the cat continues to itch, then it could be a seasonal allergy. First of all, how old is the cat?
She is 8. Yes, she is just now 8 years old.
Okay. Is this the first summer she's had itchies?
Yeah, I've noticed it, starting with this year, I'm thinking backwards towards springish.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, I would think fleas before anything else. It would be unusual for her to have environmental allergies starting at 8, but she could have a food allergy that can start anytime. So you want to make sure it's not fleas first, and then follow up on other options.
Gotcha. All right. Thanks very much for your advice.
You betcha.
Thank you, Joan. Okay, now, Martha, apologies.
Actually,
before
we pick up Martha, I just want to add one thing just to follow up on what Carrie said, is that there are a lot of knockoff products out there, and which I want to emphasize what she said about getting, when we really want to make sure we're getting good control, and you were asking about for the tick thing as well. There are so many knockoff collars out on the market, a lot even being sold in legitimate stores. And I know the stores do not know that they're selling knockoff products, otherwise they'd be horrified. I have friends who've come to me for, they thought, allergies. They've dutifully bought the collars that we all think we're buying, and they were knockoffs, and you cannot tell the difference. It's very hard to tell from the packaging. They look legit.
Yeah, I had a drug rep who said they went to a veterinarian who had 6 different boxes on their desk, and they all looked very, very, very similar until you looked really closely at them.
There's not even a way to differentiate, like in price. It's not like a $10 more for the, it's the name
if
brand.
They should be pretty much price fixed. So if you get a cheap one,
yeah,
it's a knockoff. Okay. Yeah. That's an easy way to know.
But the best way is to get it from your vet or from their online pharmacy if you don't want to go to the vet.
Sure.
Pretty much every vet has an online pharmacy now.
Yeah, I have mine delivered to my house from the drug company directly.
Okay. No, Chewy.
Not even from a warehouse.
Yeah.
From the drug company to my house. Yeah. Because they're switched out in all kinds of places. So, yeah, I just wanted to add that because it's you don't always know what you're getting. It's crazy. There's a whole market around knockoff products now. It's kind of scary.
I can only imagine.
Yeah. So I just wanted to add that. Sorry.
Well, thank you for the addition. Yes. Okay. Martha, again, thank you so much for hanging on in Gansworth. Martha, you're on.
Hi. I'm not calling on behalf of a friend who has a 17-year-old feral cat that she's been feeding all these years. The cat has a sore in her mouth. She drools. She keeps the mouth open. Sometimes she paws at it. And a long time ago, the cat got in the have-a-heart trap and got spayed. But she will not get in the have-a-heart trap that my friend puts out for her. And my friend is wondering, what can she got some online antibiotics or from, I don't know, some source. But that didn't seem to make any difference. And she's just been unable to catch her. She has left, taken out the food for a while, but she hasn't, literally starved her because she is old and she's very fond of her. And so is there a sedative that she could give the cat so that she could catch the cat? Or she has a little cat house set out for her on a porch. And, it's warmed up in the winter and because cat won't come in. And so what is your advice to her? And it might be a cancer the way the cat's treating.
That would be a concern.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking, too. The problem with giving a sedative, though, is she could go somewhere else and fall asleep, and then we don't know where she's fallen asleep. And that would be my concern there.
They do make different kinds of traps. I know there's like a drop trap. It's almost like a box that falls on the cat.
Or do you make her just hungry enough that she will go into the trap?
It sounded like she did that, though, trying to hold the food out.
Right.
It is hard once they've been trapped and have a heart. They often get trapped smart.
Right.
That's a tough one.
That is a tough one. And that probably is a tumor, you're right, because that at her age, it's very common for them to develop oral tumors that can be quite painful, unfortunately. That's a quandary.
Yeah. Yeah,
Where would she get a drop trap?
I wonder if you could call the shelter if they would have anything, any ideas.
Right. This is one of these where I wish
Sue was here.
Yeah. I know. she's worked with Scruff. I volunteer with Scruff as a feral cat spay neuter program, which may have been the one. Well, I don't know if they were doing it 17 years ago, but I know they have alternative to trapping if they won't go in the have a heart. So you might want to reach out to Scruff. It's Scruff. I believe their website is scruffcats.org. And contact them and see if they could give you some advice because they have been trapping cats for years and years.
Right. Oh, well, thank you so much.
You bet.
Martha, thanks so much. If you want to give us a call, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. With all of your vet questions, we're going to take one more call from Karen in Chatham. Karen, you're on.
Hi, thank you. We have four cats, all feral or adopted. And the last cat that we trapped feral is really not able to get along with the other cats. And he's a wonderful cat, but vicious with the other cats. And we've been trying to rehome him. He really attacked our cat this morning by chance because we made a mistake. And the cat's now having a, going to the clinic. Is there any hope of any mitigation? Because we are really trying to find a home for him and we'll not just put him out.
Well, I hate to say it, but there are some feral cats that are just feral and they're not going to be happy.
He follows my husband around like a puppy dog. He sits on his lap. He's very friendly to people. And I have a little 6-pound dog. He's fine with the dog. but not with the other cats.
It's just other cats.
And yeah. we're going to do, you know, he's a great cat. He's a wonderful pet.
So then it's just, then it's a matter of just finding someone who wants a cat that doesn't already have one. Yeah. If you can do
that. In other words, there's no hope.
Oh, of socializing him with other cats, do you mean?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like he's probably going to be a good candidate for being in a multi-cat house.
Yeah, it sounds like he just goes totally red.
Yeah.
He just sees red.
Right.
Heartbreaking,
Christine. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, if it sounds like you're pretty savvy with cats and have a lot of experience, so.
Yeah, we've done this. We've done everything. You know, we did it slowly. We had them in a room. We let them see each other. But we've not been successful. And it just breaks our heart. But also, we're stuck because we need to find a home, and it's not that easy. And
No.
So I could, as a last ditch, I would ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, besides keeping them completely separate in your home,
what we're doing.
Yeah.
Very
I would just
challenging.
Really try to reach out and see if there's anyone who could help you find someone who is looking for a single kitty.
Yeah.
You know, someone who lost a cat. Someone, you know, you could call local veterinarians and ask them to keep an eye out for someone who's looking for a kitty cat.
We're trying. I was just wondering. I just wanted to cross all my bases before we, just in case you had any ideas. So thank you for your time. And if there were any, there's no way to get in touch with me. But he really is a wonderful cat, and not for us. Okay, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Karen, thanks so much for giving a ring.
Maybe somebody will call and say, I'm looking for a single
cat.
We can make the match here online.
We can do matchmaker. How about that? We've got an email from Melissa. It's a bit of a long one, so we'll see how much truncating I can't do. They got a 15-year-old cat named Ruby, lost a significant amount of weight over the past 6 months. Solid 11-pounder, now down to 9 pounds. Geriatric blood work done in June this year reveals no issues except a slightly elevated white blood cell count. He is intermittently vomiting about once a week. His stools are not very solid, but not like diarrhea, greenish and very smelly. Some out-of-the-box urination behaviors, but not often. I have gone through many end-of-life scenarios with multiple cats, and I'm just looking for a situation where Sweet Ruby will not have to get that first extremely painful shot. He is all bones at this point. Is there any medication that can be administered prior that would lend more comfort for him? My veterinarian will come to my home when needed. She is also looking into this.
As far as the pain, I mean, I feel like they're not necessarily giving a painful injection.
Unless it's just the IV. I think most vets these days give pre-sedation before they euthanize.
Even for at home?
Any of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
You can also pre-medicate them at home, you know, if, assuming they're eating.
Yeah.
And they'll take like gabapentin.
Something.
But, you know, I wonder if they have, the fact that the blood work, certainly this could be cancer, unfortunately, but it could be just really bad IBD. Mm-hmm. If they haven't tried steroids, no animal should die without the benefit of steroids, is the long veterinary saying.
Yeah.
So there are, still some other possibilities that could be treatable. But certainly there is sedation that can be given. We also will often give an injectable. That's not painful, just goes under the skin, and it literally makes the cat fall asleep. Yeah. So by the time they get the final injection, they're sleeping.
Yeah.
Very peaceful.
Yeah. And gabapentin ahead of time makes them really not care about much of anything at all.
Yeah.
So, I know.
Tough email.
It is hard.
Yeah.
We've got a bit of a less of a downer. Peter Howard's just an elaboration email. Mm-hmm. You talked a minute ago about dogs and ticks, but please expand on which ticks get on dogs and which tick diseases can dogs contract. I'm going to go ahead and say all ticks can get on dogs.
All ticks can get on dogs.
I don't need any of the qualifications to say that.
I could answer this one because I am just a freak about ticks. And I actually have some updated data from the Cary Institute that came out this year. So dogs, all the ticks can get on dogs. But as far as the diseases we're concerned about in this area, are Lyme, Anaplasma, and Babesia, We have Ehrlichia in smaller numbers here. Lyme, you know, fortunately, dogs can get infected with these, and are fortunately dogs are largely immune to them to an extent. So about 90 to 95% of dogs are naturally immune to Lyme disease, which means they'll test positive but not have any symptoms from it. That being said, 5 to 10% will get sick and will need a round of doxycycline. And 1% of Lyme-positive dogs will develop a very serious and fatal consequence of it called Lyme nephritis, which is an inflammation basically in the kidneys. Ooh. I lost a dog to this myself. Oh. It is not fun. And so we do want to protect our dogs because no one wants to lose their dog from something potentially preventable. So that's the Lyme situation. Mm-hmm. We have Anaplasma. And that one doesn't seem to be quite as prone to causing fatal complications, but a lot of dogs are testing positive. I'm noticing that a lot of dogs who are on tick preventative are testing positive for Anaplasma, and I think it is transmitted very quickly because only 6% of our ticks in this area carry Anaplasma. I was very surprised to hear that from the Carey Institute. I thought it was going to be about 80% because I'm diagnosing Anaplasma at least 30 to 1 in my dogs compared to Lyme.
Yeah, I went to a talk once where they said that Anaplasma can be transmitted within an hour.
Okay, thank you for saying that.
So
okay, that makes sense.
Most of our tick products don't kill that quickly.
That's one of the reasons I like Seresto too, because it does repel more.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So in Lyme, we're finding in the study that was done in the ticks in this area, 30% carried Lyme, 30% carried Babesia, which I was surprised to hear, and which is why Saratoga County has the highest rate of human Babesia cases in the United States. Yes, it's a lovely distinction to have. But both of those take longer to transmit, apparently. I have not yet seen a case of Babesia in a dog. Have you?
No, okay. And of course, I've been out of practice for a year.
Right.
So.
Okay. So allegedly, it can cause anemia and low platelet counts. I have yet to encounter one, so I don't know how commonly they get it and develop this, whereas we definitely seem to treat Lyme more commonly. And Anaplasma seems to be the thing I'm having to treat for clinical disease most commonly. Mm-hmm. But again, we're seeing it more commonly as well. I have had a few cases of Ehrlichia. My own dog had Ehrlichia. He contracted it in New York State. He was not sick from it. And now we have the Lone Star tick coming up.
Yeah.
It's now established in Albany County. I don't know the consequences of that in dogs. I don't know if they're going to develop alpha-gal syndrome or not. I don't know if that's been looked at yet. I don't think there's been any reports of that in dogs. So that's about the extent.
Okay. Yeah, and the alpha-gal syndrome is when
you
have an immune reaction to meat products.
Yes.
It's red meat specifically, right?
I think it's also pork. I think it was beef, pork, and dairy.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But it's not everybody.
Yeah.
Not everybody develops it. So they're still trying to work that out. And we don't know if there's any reaction in dogs yet. And that's from the saliva.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's not an infection. So, and then this new tick that you were talking about, the long-eared tick or something.
About ears. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I looked it up the last time.
I think I saw that. Yeah. And that somehow does reproduce.
Now, what I read is that they don't seem to think it spreads any
diseases. That's
diseases.
Right. That's
but
correct.
Then someone called in on the last program and said that they had heard of a disease in dogs
that it
but
carries.
I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
I honestly can't remember.
I need to
what it
get
was.
On that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
we will be right back. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Vox Pop. Oh, okay. Here on WAMC. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 with all of your pets and vets questions. We'll be right back. You're listening to Vox Pop here on WAMC this July 22nd, Wednesday, Pets and Vets Show. We've got a lot of calls to get to, so we're going to start getting to them. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. Get your name on the list. We're going to go to Regina in Catskill. Regina, you're on.
I just adopted an 8-year-old male Corgi Jack Russell mix, And when I got him, he had all his shots. But when I took him to my vet, they did a sample, and they also gave him a few more shots. But he has hookworms. And I started him on the anti-tick, flea tick and whatever medication. I have seen two of them come out of him when he's been outside. And I was just wondering if there's anything that I should worry about me, and what symptoms should I watch out for him?
So you probably didn't see a hookworm come out because they are too tiny to be seen with the naked eye.
Well, they were little white worms.
Yeah, those might have been tapeworms. Most of the current heartworm, flea tick, deworming combo products will take care of all of that. So hopefully you won't see any more tapeworms. The hookworms, again, as long as they are getting a monthly preventative, you are treating him every month. And and the medication will eventually get rid of all those worms. The one downside is hookworms, if they get into the soil, if the eggs get in the soil, they can last a long time. So you want to be really fastidious about picking up his poop out in the yard, because you don't want your yard to become infested.
No, it's not a yard. I'm in the woods.
Okay. So the one concern is hookworms is considered a zoonotic thing where people can get it. And obviously you have to eat their poop. So most people aren't going to be eating their dog's poops. But the actual larva of the hookworms, if they hatch out in the soil, they can actually burrow into your skin. I got yelled at as a kid from a woman who picked me up hitchhiking because I had bare feet. And she was like, you're going to get hookworms. It is pretty rare. It's usually more children out playing in the dirt kind of thing. But if your dog is going off into the woods to poop and you're not out there a lot, I wouldn't worry about it. And generally, the monthly deworming will take care of it. And it shouldn't be a long-term issue.
And they don't shed anything in the house then?
No, it's only through the stool. Yep, it's only through the stool.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Regina, thank you. What are some of the symptoms people can get if they are picking up hookworms?
I don't know. I'm not
you,
a
okay,
doctor.
That's fine.
I don't treat those two-legged creatures.
That's okay.
But dogs can get, the most common thing is bloody stool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They'll get blood in their stool.
So, perfect.
Yeah, don't know what people get either.
Besides sores on their skin from the hookworm crawling in.
Yeah.
We're going to keep getting down this list. We've got Terry out in Ashford, Connecticut. Terry, you're on.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hello. Hi, this is a sad one. I have a 14-and-a-half-year-old Labrador Retriever who is, she's not with it anymore. She's still here, but she does silly things like, some days I've got four steps off my deck, and some days she'll go charging off with her Superman cape on and do a face plant. Most of the time, she spends sleeping. She will come out when it's time for dinner. I don't know how her clock works. But I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, when is it time to euthanize?
Yeah. Well,
I know it's got to be done. Don't want to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the way I look at this when I think about it is, old age is not a disease. And if she is happy to see you, recognizes you, is eating, and you can manage her, this is about your quality of life as well. If you can manage her.
Does having to be spoon-fed mean she's eating?
That's debatable. That's up to you. That's your call.
Mainly because, she'll start to eat and then she'll walk away. I have two other dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is where we get into the gray zone, right? So, right.
Yeah.
And there's no right answer and no wrong answer, which is the good news. That's a tough call. How are you doing?
Makes it harder.
It does. I went through this myself with an 18-year-old beagle, and I'd never quite new, you know, because he was doing well and I was having a hard time caring for him. And there was nothing wrong with him except that he was, you know, losing his marbles and had severe cognitive dysfunction, but was happy and eating. And it's very challenging to know. It's very challenging to know. And that usually means that there's not a right answer or a wrong answer. And then you just...
That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah, I know.
I usually, what I would always counsel my clients is to kind of give their life a grade. Look at the different parts of their life that give them pleasure. Do they like to go for walks? Do they like to eat? Do they like to sit on the couch with you and watch TV? Do they, you know, like to sleep? You know, and make sure they can do those things with a passing grade. And and then on your quality of life,
right.
You know, are they soiling in the house? Are they not able to get up and down and you have to carry them places, you know, et cetera? And if you're getting a lot of C's and B's, okay. But if you're starting to get more D's and F's, then it might be time.
I like that. I like that. That's a good way to do that.
You know, soiling in the house raises another question. She does not, you know, she hasn't urinated in the house, but she doesn't have a fecal schedule. She goes when it's ready and while she's moving. Fortunately, it's fairly dry, so cleanup is easy in the house.
Is her hind end fairly
normal?
Yes, I experience that a lot with my larger breed dogs. Is she able to stand up on her own? Do you have to help her get up?
Yeah, but it makes you wonder. Yeah, she's real weak in the rear end.
Yeah, that usually goes hand in
hand. She can't stand up on her own.
Okay, but that usually goes hand in hand. When I start to see that back end get weak, usually they often start dropping stool. So are you able to take her for walks at all, or is she too weak to go for a walk?
Well, I'm fortunate in that I have a couple of acres, and, if we go outside, you know, 3-4 times a day, sometimes she actually lopes across the field. Other days it's like, you know, she goes out, and if I'm moving, she's moving. If I stop, she stops. And other days she'll just roam off. You know, she becomes a Russian Labrador Retriever, roaming off.
I know. I mean, most of my practice is, you know, dealing with the stage of life, and I personally love the old dogs. It's also hard to know, you know, at this stage because, you know, they're basically very geriatric and she sounds like she's doing okay. And the question is, how are you doing taking care of a geriatric dog? It can be a lot of work and your quality of life is part of this equation as well. And you have to really take that into consideration too, like, you know, Dr. McLaughlin was saying. So
I'm actually doing better since my other two dogs don't fight with each other anymore.
Yeah. I like the grading system though that Dr. McLaughlin was just saying. I think that's a great idea, you know. Do it like a report card. I think that's a great idea.
Terry, thanks so much for calling in. We appreciate it.
All right.
Good luck.
Thank you.
I have some better news, hopefully.
Yeah.
We've got an email from Elaine Amable. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing this. Elaine would like to get in touch with the woman who called about rehoming the cat. If you were the caller who called in with the feral cat that we have decided needs to be rehomed, send an email to voxpop@wamc.org.
Her name was Karen.
Karen, if you're still listening, send us an email, voxpop@wamc.org. I'll try and work some of my magic and get everybody connected here.
Right.
A bit of good news
before that would be great.
That's
maybe
awesome.
Some unfortunately also sad calls. We're going to go to Betty out in Gilderland. Betty, you're on.
Okay. So I have a year-and-a-half-year-old boxer, boxer mix, and she was diagnosed with level 1 kidney disease, which progressed to level 4 kidney disease. The veterinarian put her on a kidney diet, and she eats and she drinks a lot of water, pees a lot. The vet has said that she probably had about 30 days to live. She also supposedly has high blood pressure, and she has teeny little pills for the blood pressure, and she's now completed 60 days worth of that, so she's doubled her lifespan according to the vet. But the vet also said, I only have experience with old dogs that have kidney disease, not so much a year and a half year old dog. Any advice?
Wow, that's really sad.
I'm so sorry
to hear that.
Yeah.
Did they reach any conclusion about why the year-and-a-half-old dog? Was it a congenital kidney?
Congenital. Her siblings all weigh 60-some-odd pounds, and she's more like 30-some pounds.
Yeah.
It was a litter from a rescue.
Yeah. I had a client who had a golden retriever with congenital kidney dysplasia, and basically they just weren't made right. And that dog lasted several months in pretty bad stage kidney disease. So it sounds like you're doing what you're supposed to do, you know, keeping the diet, you know, so she's not getting excessive protein, making sure she keeps hydrated, keeping her blood pressure under control. That's all kind of what you can do. But unfortunately, you know, unless you want to go to a university that does kidney transplants, there's unfortunately not much else that we can do.
Okay.
Unfortunately, they don't really do dialysis in dogs.
Right.
Not around here, anyways.
Yeah.
Usually, dialysis is done as a step to transplants, but
And unfortunately, you hate to give a prognosis, but if it's stage four, which means her blood values are pretty high, it's shorter than longer.
Is she eating? I mean, how's her appetite?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, she's not really excited about the dry food, so we bought this little cans of Beneful. Really tiny cans that seem to be like a treat, and mix it together, and she'll definitely eat then. But
good,
a huge appetite.
Yeah.
Well, Betty, thanks so much for giving us a call again.
So sorry. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a hard part of the job, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're coming up on the last couple of minutes here. We're going to go to Maria in Sheffield for our last call. Maria, you are on. Hello, Maria?
Hello. Yes, sorry. I have to turn the radio down. Yes, thank you. I used to be a breeder of Spinoni Italianos. Now I've retired, but I have my wonderful Henry, who's 12 and a half, and his eyes, his ears, everything is terrific, except he's lost serious muscle mass in his rear legs. And he's on gabapentin, and he's on cozaquin, and meloxicam for the pain. But I'm wondering two things. Is it good for me to take him out on walks, or is this actually worse for his muscle mass? And secondly, and more importantly, I've recently been learning about something called red light therapy for canines, which apparently, from what I gather, actually works to rebuild muscle mass. My local vet does offer this. Do you people know anything at all about this red light therapy, and does it work?
I don't know much about red light therapy. When I looked up some research on it, I actually wasn't impressed with the literature, but that was a good few years ago. I haven't looked into it since then. So at the time, it wasn't very impressive from what I was reading, but there maybe have been more impressive studies since then. And, you know, also, just so you know, there have been some recent studies about glucosamine in dogs, and apparently the current thinking from the literature is that glucosamine is not terribly helpful for humans and for dogs, and it's only helpful for...
Is it the cozaquin we're talking about?
Correct. Yes, that's the glucosamine, or the cozaquin, right.
Yeah.
It's only helpful for equines. So one thing you could try switching to is something called UC2 collagen. It might help a little bit more for pain. It works very differently by sensitizing the immune system against inflammation.
Can you tell me again the name of it?
It's a general product just called UC2 collagen. Many companies make it.
Okay.
You could try that. And I think walking is great for your dog for maintaining muscle mass.
Maria, thank you so much for giving us a call. And that's just about all the time we've got for today. Thank you to the doctors for coming in. What a pleasure it's been. Support for WAMC comes from Plaza Travel Center. presenting a small group trip from Albany to Finland's Northern Lights in February, escorted. For trip details, jean@plazatravel.net. Mass Mocha presenting indoor and outdoor summer performances, including comedian Robbie Hoffman, Friday, July 24th at 8 p.m., tickets at massmocha.org. And Agricultural Stewardship Association, working to help people conserve farmland and forests in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve working land for good forever. agstewardship.org. Thanks to everybody in the control room for the ones and zeros and answering our calls. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, it's the gardening show. That's tomorrow at 2 p.m. Not me, it's Josh Landis. Stay tuned. Coming up, it's 51%.